The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Successful people can be at the top of their game in the business world and as parents, but it can sometimes be difficult to stay above it all. Now it's time to learn from an entrepreneur who has made this a reality. Welcome to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiu. Chris and his guests will share ideas and experiences to help you manage your life in business and as a parent. Now, here's Chris Efesiu.
Did you know that more than 3.5 million children are reported to Child Protective Services as victims of child abuse and neglect? This is approximately 47 per 1,000 children, or 5% of the U.S. population, if my math is correct. An estimated 794,000 children were substantiated as victims of abuse, a rate of 10.6 per 1,000 children, or 1% of the U.S. population. In 2007, an estimated 1,760 children died as a result of abuse. Tragic. And besides the obvious human tragedy, there is an economic cost that you will find appalling. But there is good news, because child abuse is preventable. And the better news is that you and I can do things that can make a difference in preventing this awful tragedy.
You're listening to Straight Up with Chris, broadcasting live from Washington, D.C.
You've heard me before speak about Prevent Child Abuse America on this broadcast, as both my wife and I sit on this organization's board of directors. The president and CEO of Prevent Child Abuse America is James Morovich. Jim is a former deputy commissioner for the Indiana Department of Correction and was the Indiana State Welfare Director, during which time Indiana was awarded 7 federal high-performance cash bonuses for successes in welfare reform, child welfare, and received national recognition as a leader in the state children's health insurance program and for Healthy Families program, a voluntary home visitation program. Jim is also the recipient of the Sagamore of the Wabash, which is the highest award that can be given to an Indiana citizen for leadership and accomplishment. And it is indeed my pleasure to have Jim as my guest today. Jim, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. Glad to be here.
Jim, please set the stage for us by giving us some background on the organization and its activities.
Sure. Well, first of all, I've had the privilege of being the CEO for 7 years of an organization that is now 40 years old, founded in 1972 in Chicago, with our mission, which is very simple and straightforward, to prevent the abuse and neglect of our nation's children. And in order to accomplish this mission, we have two networks. We have a chapter in every one of the states, and we have in 41 states a total of 539 Healthy Families America sites, which is a home visitation program, a voluntary one, for new parents. Throughout the United States, we have over 300 different prevention strategies that are being implemented by our local chapters. And probably as important for our listeners to know is that when there's a lot of definitions about prevention, but the one we use, I think, is always the best one, because we define prevention as the abuse never occurring in the first place.
Which is exactly what prevention should always be. So since 72, certainly a number of years being around, the problem is mushrooming, regardless of the good efforts of this organization. One hears the numbers I recited at the opening, and the fact that this organization has been around for, you know, a better part of 40 years, one might think that, well, you know, not enough has happened. That is not the case at all. So please give us some idea of the accomplishments of PCA, past, present, and what you have on the works for the future.
Well, I'd love to do that. It's always good to talk about the good work of not only our national office staff, but our chapters and Healthy Families Network, and a lot of good citizens who participate as volunteers. You know, our organization is probably the oldest that has focused on prevention of child abuse and neglect as its only mission. And in that regard, for over 40 years, we've been emphasizing the importance of prevention to the point where now our market research indicates that 90% of, plus of the American population believes child abuse and neglect are important policy issues and that they think we should do something about it. I think that is a major accomplishment because before action, I think we always have to have awareness. Speaking a little bit more recently, when the health care bill was developed, we had a significant informational and educational role to play in, I think, informing our legislators that an investment of $1.5 million in home visitation was very important. And I use the term investment very specifically because some people may see that as an expense on a budget. But we believe that home visitation services is one of the best prevention strategies the United States has. And estimates range, you know, at various ends of the spectrum. But we believe for every dollar of prevention, we save seven in other costs, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later. The other thing that I think is more not as concrete but as important is the fact that we have partnerships with well over 40 national organizations that want to focus on healthy child development, child well-being, and just the best and family well-being. I think it's important to note that because when we speak with a unified, consistent message, a common voice, it is a lot easier for children who aren't voters to be heard. And on a very personal note, I'm very proud of the fact that when somebody makes a donation to Prevent Child Abuse America, 89 cents out of every dollar that they donate goes to programs. Only 11 cents goes to administrative costs. That's a very rough, brief background of some of the accomplishments we've had, Chris.
And that is, it's laudable and kudos to you and all of your people, some of whom I've had the good fortune to meet recently. It is work well done. The work ahead is a huge amount, but one has to take bite sizes of the problem. Otherwise, one would be overwhelmed. And clearly, the examples you just recited, they represent more than a bite size. And again, congratulations for the good work. So, we talked a little bit about costs, and there are obviously two kinds of costs here. The obvious one is the human tragedy of it, because the abuse of anyone is preposterous. The abuse of a child is unthinkable. But there are economic costs as well. I wonder if you can comment on the human costs first, and then we'll deal with the economic costs in a minute.
Well, that'd be great. And Chris, I really appreciate the fact that you broke these down into two different perspectives, because we all know probably somebody who has been abused or neglected. We may not know that we know them, but we probably know the person. And that person often has tremendous emotional and physical impacts that have stemmed from the time that the child, as a child, they were abused or severely neglected. So when we think about the human cost, the research and the data exists that tells us how bad this human cost is. When a child is abused, there are sometimes lifelong consequences in chronic health problems, in mental health issues, substance abuse issues, academic success or failure. We all talk about the importance of education, and yet when a child is abused or neglected, there's a higher probability that they'll have academic failure. They'll be tardy for school. They may be absent from school more often. They don't hand in their homework, and they drop out. When we look at juvenile justice issues, there's a higher probability or propensity for a child who's been abused to end up becoming not only a delinquent, but a violent delinquent offender. When we take a look at criminal costs, the National Institute of Justice, and I believe it was 1996, did a study that said at one of the adult male felony correctional institutions in the United States, that 68% of those adult male felons had been abused as a child. So when we think about the act of a child being hurt, we have to think about what it does to them. And I really want to express my sincerity and my appreciation to the folks who have been abused, who struggle to make sure that the trauma of that abuse doesn't control their life. It is not an easy thing to forget. And even though it may be years in the past, the trauma of child abuse can never be erased. And I think that says a lot about the character of the people who have to live with this trauma.
Indeed. And to your point earlier that each one of us either knows someone or knows of someone that has been abused as a child, and that in some way, shape, or form seems to be highly compartmentalized in our own brains. But when we think of the numbers I recited at the opening of the show, those numbers are not really small. So, you know, 5% of the child age population being, you know, victims of child abuse, that's not a small percentage. And so the fact that all of that touches us, directly or indirectly, should make each one of us to have a call to action, to jump in and do something about it, because not doing something about it is not an option. A question just before we go on break that I'm going to pose, and I'm going to take your answer to the other side of the break, and that is, we know, we've discussed in this program on at least two or three occasions, that in the case of bullying, a bully can be the bullied, or the other way around, the person who has been bullied in the past can become the bully. My question to you is, can an abused child become a child abuser later in life? I will take your answer at the other side of the break. My guest is Jim Borovitch, and you are listening to Straight Up with Chris on Voice America Variety Channel. I'm Chris Efesiou. We'll be back in a moment.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Efesiou understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Tune in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Voice America Variety Channel. It's practical, positive solutions for a happy, empowered, and successful life.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Efesiou. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. For information on this program and other activities, please visit my website, chrisfsu.com or cdochiefdaddyofficer.com. My Facebook page is Chris Efesiou, and I'm Chief Daddy Officer on Twitter. Throughout this hour, I'd look forward to hearing from you your questions. You can call them at 1-866-472-5788 or email your questions to chris@straightupwithchris.com. My guest today is Jim Morovich, the CEO of Prevent Child Abuse America. Please visit their website, preventchildabuse.org. On Facebook, they are Prevent Child Abuse America, and follow them on Twitter at PCA America. Jim, before we went on break, I asked this question of you. Just like in the case of bullies, certain bullies in adulthood were being bullied as children or as younger persons. Is there a correlation between that and an abused child becoming a child abuser in adulthood?
Well, Chris, again, I think you're asking a very good question. And before I respond, I want to just relate a very quick lesson I learned when I was state welfare director in Indiana. I was having a discussion with child welfare workers, and it just a general discussion. And one of the things they said that I've never forgotten, they said, Jim, when you take a look at a child abuse case, even if it looks like it's the same age, maybe even the same home, don't make the assumption that the impacts or the abuse was identical and that the solution or the treatment to it is should be identical. And I think that I wanted to start off my response with that piece of information that our good caseworkers in Indiana told me 10, 15 years ago. I believe that, first of all, there is data that does indicate that there is a proportion of children who have been abused who end up becoming abusers. That number changes by research, so I don't even want to throw a number out here. But, yes, it does happen. What the lesson that I learned from our caseworkers, however, guides me in the response to your question right now. I think we have to look at this in a very person-specific way. I think we have to look at what the resiliency of that child was, what the circumstances of the abuse was, what the environment was, who was doing the abuse, was there a loving, caring parent or a caregiver or other adult who came into the child's life. You know, again, I want to say that there are emerging therapies that are doing wonders to make sure that people who have been abused, whether as a child or even as they grow into adulthood, you know, can learn to overcome the feelings of it must have been my fault, which obviously it was not. But the trauma of abuse can never be erased. And I think that sometimes children can act out in response to that abuse in an aggressive way, or in some instances in a very withdrawn or submissive way, questioning their self-worth. So it's a very good question, and I think the answer comes in different shapes and forms depending upon the circumstances of the abuse, Chris.
Thank you. Another side of that impact is the economic cost. And I know there have been two studies that have been done looking at the cost of child abuse. And I have to tell you, when I heard those numbers, I was blown away. So I will not steal your thunder. Please share them with our audience.
I'd be happy to. And like you, these are numbers that are, I think, they should blow everyone away, because it's really not a good mark on the United States. There have been two significant economic impact studies done, one by our own organization, Prevent Child Abuse America, a study that we published earlier this year that was graciously funded by the Macy Foundation. And what we found was that the annual cost of not preventing abuse and neglect is $80 billion a year. And that's a recurring cost, $80 billion this year, $80 billion next year, the year after, and ongoing. And what this means is that this represents the dollars we spend in a single year as a result of the maltreatment. It includes the annual cost for child protective services, law enforcement, and medical intervention, and a host of other things. A second study came up with even a more dramatic number. The Centers for Disease Control, at about the same time we released our report, did a different type of report, but still it was an economic impact report on children. And what they found is that $124 billion represents the lifetime cost of new child maltreatment cases that occur in a single year. And what does this mean? It means that the lifetime cost for all children maltreated in a single year equals $124 billion. Individually, this means that for a survivor of child abuse, we can expect that $210,000 is lost in productivity and other treatment personal costs for that person. Now, bottom line is, whether we're doing an incident study or a prevalence study, which are the difference between the two I just said, the bottom line is we are spending a lot of money on something that we as a nation should take much more aggressive act to make sure never happens in the first place. When we take a look at a social math type of, you know, question, you know, what could we do with $80 billion if we had it? I went to the websites of various different organizations, and for $80 billion, we could pay for the college tuition in a public school for 629,000 people. We could cover 5 million people with health insurance. We could pay for almost 1.5 million elementary school teachers, or we could buy the services of 1.2 million nurses, just to give us some perspective. That's a big number.
It's a huge number, and the two numbers, you know, the CDC's number is about 50% higher than yours. Of course, that is a different study and looks at things a little differently. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But this is $80 billion and $124 billion. This is billion with a B. This is higher than the GDP of some small countries. That it is shameful to think that those dollars are being spent in this country, the most thriving economy worldwide, and presumably the best place for any man, woman, or child to live. Well, enough with the bad news. There's got to be some good news, and the good news is child abuse doesn't have to happen. It's not a disease. It's not an epidemic. It's not in the air. It can be prevented.
There's no question about that. It is absolutely preventable, but it takes all of us to do that, Chris. I agree with you.
And that is where I want to spend a good bit of time, so that those who listen to this broadcast and I need to understand what it is that I can do to help advance this cause, what it is that I can do to help prevent another child from being abused.
Well, you know, I guess let me start off with a statement. I believe that parents and families are the best people to raise children. And I still believe, even having worked in a prison system for over 20 years, that parents do want to be as good of a parent as they can be. And I think we as a society and as a nation needs to take the time to understand that parenting is, in fact, a very difficult job. I'm always drawn to the reflection of about 10 years ago when former President Clinton and former President Bush got on a TV show or advertisement together, and they said, you know, we both had the toughest jobs in the world. And they talk about being a parent, not the President of the United States. I think we all have to accept the lead that they gave us on that and realize that raising a child in our country under these trying times especially is very difficult. So I never want to take away the accountability and the importance of a family, but it would be wrong for us not to think that we all have a role to play in making sure that that child has the greatest opportunity for healthy child development. Now, I'm a big believer that government can't be all things to all people all the time, and that, you know, government has a specific role, but so do we as citizens of this country. I think it's important for government to issue policy frameworks for a social issue of this nature. I think that's probably one of the most important things they can do, but right now the United States does not have a national plan or a national strategy on how to prevent the abuse and neglect of our nation's children. You know, I believe that to have a great country, that country rests on a three-legged stool, and that stool is national security, economic stability, and the very people who should profit and benefit from the first two. What good is it having the other two if we can't have a strong individual family-based society in which we can, you know, prosper and help the rest of the world? We need a plan. So I believe government has a role, and that role is what I just said. On a different level, I think communities have a responsibility. I think we're doing one of the things to help our communities right now. We're helping people become informed on the importance of healthy child development, the importance of parenting. And if we're a neighbor, we ought to be very sensitive, even a friend, a relative, a neighbor. We ought to be sensitive to the fact that raising a child can be stressful, that we could be frustrated with some of the behavior of the child, and that those two things, frustration and or stress, are often the precursors of emotional and physical abuse. And we can help that by helping a neighbor, a friend, a relative, and say, you know, take the night off. Let me watch the children for you. Just relax and go out and have a good time. We can volunteer at community agencies that serve children and families. And everyone can express, whether it's at the voting booth or when they see their policymakers personally, that, hey, children are important. What are we as a country, as a community, as a city going to do about that? But importantly, all of these things should focus on, in my opinion, what can we do to help parents build a lifelong, healthy relationship with their child starting at birth? And, you know, we don't talk enough about employers in the faith community sometimes, about the importance that they have in our community. Employers are very powerful in many ways because they are the economic thrivingness of our communities. Well, employers can and are doing things. They can consider policies that focus on not only profitability, but the needs of their employees. I remember on a recent visit to New Hampshire, that very statement was made by the vice president of a company that said, when somebody comes to us with a problem, we talk to them and try to figure out how do we remain profitable and what can we do to help that family, that worker whose family is in need right now. There are employee assistance programs that could be made part of the compensation plan. Many companies, Kohl's and Best Buy especially, have been very supportive of community service for their employees. Well, our chapter network and our national office offer brown bag lunches at workplaces so that we can help inform parents about healthy child development, parenting, and whatnot. And, you know, there could be policies on flex time and whatnot. And when we get to the faith community, you know, they can develop ministries for new parents, giving time for them to come together, new parents to come together as a group so they don't feel socially alienated, which is another reason for maltreatment of children. They can hold, 3, 4, or 5 hours of watching the children while moms and dad goes out. There can be all kinds of things faith communities, employers, community organizations can do because, Chris, we all have a role to play.
Absolutely. My guest is Jim Borovitch. You are listening to Straight Up with Chris on Voice America Variety Channel. I'm Chris FSC. We'll be back in a moment.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah! If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epicu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epicu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epicu. My guest is Jim Mirovich, and you're listening to Straight Up with Chris. Please visit his website, preventchildabuse.org. On Facebook, visit Prevent Child Abuse America, and follow him on Twitter at PCA America. While we were on break, we received a couple of emails from listeners. I'm going to ask you this question, Jim. This comes from Dania in Boston. It says, does the abused child often become the adult abuser at home? How about the workplace? Is there a correlation, as we often hear of abusive bosses?
That's an excellent question from Boston. And the answer is there are relationships between abuse and eventual bullying. And then not only bullying in the classroom or in elementary and middle and high school, but also in the workplace. What the way we're attempting to overcome that is we're developing right now two things that prevent Child Abuse America: a higher degree of intensity in providing bullying materials and information to our chapter and Healthy Families Network, so that locally our chapters and our Healthy Families Network can be the go-to people in each of our states and communities. And one of the other things that we're working on is with our home visitation program, we're actually building a component of it to teach parents on how to encourage empathy, even in a child that's recently born, an infant, all the way up to their first day of school. How do we teach children as a 2-year-old, as a 3-year-old, to have empathy for other children their age? Because as we know, one of the characteristics of bullying or of the bullier is the fact that they don't have empathy for their target. And that's unfortunate. And then sometimes those folks grow up to be the bosses who yell, scream, or bully people in the workplace. So unfortunately, yes, there is a relationship to it. And I want to give hope to the fact that we're trying to do not only the home visitation component, we're also working with John Hopkins University, Clemson University, and Butler University in Indianapolis, Indiana, to talk about how do we create a comprehensive approach, a prevention strategy, to stop bullying from happening in the first place.
Wonderful. A second question, which has in part been answered, but I think that it bears asking and answering again because of its importance. This comes from Philadelphia, and it says, the statistics of child abuse are astounding and appalling. How can businesses participate in the call to action? You talked to us just before the break about how employers can get involved. I'll ask you to bring that about again, because again, this is important information for those who are in an employer's position listening to the show and how they can possibly help.
Great. Well, first of all, thank you to Philadelphia for recognizing that these are appalling. I think that's the first thing. Education, information, public awareness about the importance of healthy child development is always the first step into solving a problem. You know, I've been thinking about this question ever since it was asked right before the break. And what I think is probably the best and easiest thing to do is, depending on the size of the organization, to determine how to have a, I'll loosely call it a town hall meeting, a meeting with employees, a survey, whatever it may be, and just simply ask the employees, you know, if there was something we could do to recognize the importance of being a parent and recognizing the importance that keeping a job means we have to be profitable, what would that be? You know, now I'm a big fan of General George Patton, you know, the Third Army in World War II. And basically he said, you know, if you tell people what you want and not how to do it, you'll be surprised with their ingenuity. I'm going to modify that statement a little bit and say, if you ask people what they want, and or you tell them what they, you know, the issue is and what has to be done, they can come up with a solution. And I would bet that in that company, the very fact that that person from Philadelphia asked the question tells me a whole lot about his or her character already. And I'll bet you that would be a very successful sit-down.
And that's entirely the case in my experience just about everywhere. And I think what employers can do, again, to your point of General Patton, the employer can be the mentor. Because a mentor does not really take the employee by the hand and take him to the end point, to the final destination. The mentor should really be a resource that will let his or her employees to read the map and help them through the rough spots along the way and allow them to get to the destination the way they envision it. So give them the what's, if you will, but don't necessarily give them the how's, because that's when the ingenuity is going to come about, and that is when more than likely the end product is going to be one that will be much more fitting of the makeup of the employees, as opposed to a canned one size fits all kind of program that unfortunately all too often we're used to.
I agree. Very well said.
So, and I know we also talked about that before the break, but its importance cannot be overstressed. So I'm going to ask again to repeat what it is that we personally, individually, can do outside of our employers, outside of the government, outside of the places of worship. You and I, what is it that I can do to help another child from being abused?
I think what I want to do again is to draw from an experience I had when I was state welfare director. I had just been asked by the governor to move over from the Department of Correction to state welfare director, and I obviously wasn't as adversed in that area as I was in corrections. So I asked our welfare directors at the local level, I'd like to meet moms and dads who have successfully made it off welfare and stayed off. And their response is the beginning of my response to your question, Chris. And what they said was, I bet you I had 100 different conversations with folks. And every one, not 90%, but every one of the conversations started with the same way. When I asked them why, what happened, what was it, they all started by saying somebody took the time. Now, the ending always differed. You know, it was somebody took the time to give me confidence. Somebody took the time to tell me to go back to counseling. Somebody took my daughter to the emergency room so I wouldn't lose my job. But somebody took the time. The most important thing I think we can do as individuals who care about our friends, our relatives, and our family is to offer them our time. Sometimes it means just listening. Sometimes it means them letting off steam in front of us so it doesn't have to be around the children. Sometimes it means us taking the time to watch their children while they, you know, get unstressed by taking a walk, going to a movie, going out on a date. There are so many things that we could do as parents, our friends, relatives, to help parents out. And my suggestion is everyone should ask their best friends who have children. You know, when is the best time for me to be a good friend to you as a parent? And let them guide them to that. And then when they see the signs coming up, to immediately to take the time and to go and help them in the way that they've been asked. But we all have a role to play, and I don't ever want to underestimate the power of the individual helping another individual. It's powerful.
Well said. My question is that is there not a place or a moral requirement for each individual to kind of be a bit more vigilant, a bit less laissez-faire, a little bit less, it doesn't affect me today, therefore it may not be my issue. Shouldn't we be a bit more, again, vigilant is the word, looking into identifying potential problem spots? Unfortunately, now again, I'm not as well versed in this as you are, but it would appear to me that child abuse doesn't just happen. It percolates. It starts somewhere and it ends somewhere. And all too often, that cycle could probably have been interrupted if somebody bothered to pay attention and bothered to pick up a phone and call somebody or say something. Comment on that, please. Am I off the reservation here?
Nope, you're exactly right where you need to be, in my opinion. And, you know, Chris, I think you used the right phrase at the very beginning of your question, a moral requirement. I think we should have a moral requirement. We should have a moral requirement that children are not properties of people, but we should be, and therefore we need to be, you know, hands off. What we need to do is to take a look at the responsibility and the role we have of being good stewards for our future, which are, in fact, the children. Big difference, and I bring this up because our research has shown that there's a fancy name for it, and it's a lot of, you know, words behind it, but I call it the mall syndrome. M-A-L-L-L. And what I mean by that is how many times have we been walking down the street in a shopping mall somewhere publicly and we see an adult do something that to a child that we say, whoa, but we don't do anything about it. You know,
you are so right. I'm going to ask you to hold that thought until we come back from break, because that is where I was aiming to go. And that's the important thing.
There you go.
My guest is Jim Morovich, and you're listening to Straight Up with Chris on Voice America Variety Channel.
News, opinion, hear me. Your voice counts. Call toll free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epicu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Think of the world 50 years ago.
Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris. Real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Efesiou. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Good to have you back. I'm Chris Efesiou. My guest is Jim Morovich, the President and CEO of Prevent Child Abuse America. Please visit the website at preventchildabuse.org and the Facebook page, Prevent Child Abuse America, on Twitter, PCA America. So just before the break, we were talking about the need or desire or responsibility to be more vigilant at what is happening around us and potentially be that person that will instigate some intervention from happening. And Jim, you were telling us about, you're walking in the mall and you see some behavior, I'm sure we have all seen it, and it kind of throws you back of how a certain parent behaves to a child. I must say here parenthetically, I'm also thrown back at how some children behave to parents, but that's not the subject of the conversation today. At least that does not physically harm someone. But we've all seen the parent who has either verbally, physically, or both, you know, abused the child. There's no other way of putting it. What do we do? Do we not have a responsibility to tell somebody, call someone?
Well, I think we definitely have a responsibility. And again, every case is our situation is a case and fact specific. But I think I'd like to draw how we can do something and make it beneficial for the child in the situation. And that is this. We have got to take the attitude that every child is important to all of us. A child who is abused may end up being that bully in the classroom, and maybe your child isn't, but that bullying child might be disruptive and hurt the learning for other children. So the consequences of abuse and neglect reach to other people without us even thinking about it. So my feelings are this. We see that person in the mall, something happens. We don't want to insult or embarrass the parent. We certainly don't want to put ourselves in harm's way, but most importantly, we don't want to put the child in harm's way. What I would recommend is that we make a very nonchalant, very helpful, beneficial, engaging comments such as, oh, my child used to do that, but they finally grew out of it. Or, you know, anything that you could say to break the moment, because an embarrassed parent may end up taking that out on the child later. But it's so important for us to show that, you know, we care about our children, not only my children that I'm raising, but all of our children, because they are, in fact, the future of America. That shouldn't just be a campaign slogan, a plank in a platform of a political party. We have got to believe every child is, in fact, our child in that manner. And what I'm always struck by is that in 2007, UNICEF issued a report that said of the 21 wealthiest nations in the world, the United States was 20th when it came to child well-being. Now, we ought to be insulted, offended, and angry about that. For all the good that we do throughout the world and within our own country, to be the 20th out of 21 industrial or wealthiest nations, not taking care of our children, that's not where we want to be.
Could not agree with you more. And I also appreciate your suggestion of the way to handle this when we come across a potential abusive situation. Because again, the flip side of that is every parent believes that they know how to parent their children, and it is the business of that parent alone, and it is not the business of the passerby. While that may be true, in my humble opinion of parenting, parenting involves no abuse of any kind. And once abuse is seen, it should be intercepted, averted, and depending on its on the type, of course, reported. And speaking of reports, we have another question from a listener now, Mary from Raleigh, North Carolina. She says, is the legislation protecting children on a federal and state level effective? Is there pending legislation we can write or call our congressman about?
Well, there are various pieces of legislation. In fact, after the recent child sexual abuse related scandals in numerous places, Congress had numerous bills filed. One of them was, in fact, mandatory reporting. And mandatory reporting means that all of us, any adult, regardless of whether you're a school teacher or a first responder, a friend or whatever, has a responsibility to report. And there's a lot of disagreement over whether that should become law. My position is that if children are important to us, and it takes a law to make sure that everyone believes that they should be that important, then we ought to pass it. But if we do pass that mandatory reporting law, we should have a very good awareness about it. We ought to have training about it, provide the resources to make sure that it's well advertised, well trained upon, and then there has to be a public will and a political will to make sure that we hold everyone accountable. And there are, in fact, bills pending right now, when Congress, comes into session and starts dealing with other than the budget issues, there are bills that are pending, and yes, you can go on to, I think it's called thomas.gov, but I could be wrong on that, to find out the pending bills in Congress.
Jim, we have about 15, 20 seconds left. Give us your parting words.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I want to leave with the idea that abuse and neglect is preventable. We know what to do about it. We just have to do it, and we all have a role to play in making sure it goes away.
Amen to that. Count us in.
Great.
Thank you very much for being with us for the hour, your insight and passion that exudes from every word you say, and I hope that you will come back and join us at some point in the future.
That'd be great.
Wonderful. I hope you join me next week to discuss a risk management approach to raising sexually safe and healthy children with my guest, Dr. Janet Rosenzweig, author of the book, The Sex-Wise Parent. So tune in next Thursday at 6 p.m. East, 3 p.m. West on Straight Up with Chris, real talk for business and parenthood. Until then, seize the moment, every moment, at work and at home. Let's talk more next week. I'm Chris Efesiou. Thanks for listening.
Thank you again for tuning in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood. Please join your host, Chris Efesiou, again next Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time and 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Make it an engaging week at work and at home.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.